and Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Voices whisper, ancient secrets, signs and symbols are abundant. UFOs, ETs, ghosts, and even the dead move about freely. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Rob McGregor
and Trish McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, John Posey. You can go to themysticalunderground.com where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out about our books. Among them are Phenomena, Harnessing Your Psychic Abilities, The Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, Sensing the Future, and Aliens in the Backyard. Our latest book is called Mind-Blowing Synchronicities, the latest science, stories, and research. Trish's latest novel, Silent Thunder, will be published soon. Rob's most recent novel is called Tulpas, a story of mysterious beings created through deep meditation. If you are watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you would take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification buttons so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Okay, our guest today is Vicki Burnett. She's a psychic medium who has investigated hauntings with her team called POINT, Point Paranormal, since 2007. She's one of the hosts of a paranormal talk radio show on a podcast called Weird and Whatever. Now, her bio is much longer than that, but I'm going to have her talk about it. Hi, Vicki. It's great to see you.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on tonight.
So, okay, let's open up with how did you find out you were a psychic medium?
Well, it actually happened through being a paranormal investigator. In 2007, I was actually watching the season repeat of season one of Ghost Hunters. And I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. People actually do this. So I went on the computer and I found a local TAPS affiliated team. And I sent an email to the Florida Ghost team and I was placed on that team. About 7-8 months into it, I formed my own team and we've been investigating ever since. My abilities came through just a little bit at a time. At first, I would be able to sense that there was, you know, kind of something in the room, but not know much about it. I could pick up areas of energy where I'd walk through and it felt like I was being electrocuted. Then that progressed to him being able to see the spirits. Then that progressed to being able to hear them. But randomly being able to do readings, that happened. It was probably about 2013. And my daughter was in cheerleading practice. And that was the day that my former principal had passed away. So I called one of my people that I work with and I said, you know, such and such passed away. And she said, well, you know, I'm having a really bad day with my roommate. And I said, well, who's the guy that looks like blah, 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 blah. And she was like, that's her dead husband. I said, oh, wow. Okay. Well, anyway, he said, blah, 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 blah. And she said, how did you know that? And I was like, I don't know. And so I didn't know if it was just a fluke. So that summer I went and I had a friend of mine, Bobby Joe, who was on my team. I had her collect people from here, there, and everywhere. And they would call me. I would do phone readings. I knew nothing except for their name and what time they were going to call. And that's when I discovered that I could do readings. That's also when I discovered that I get physical symptoms during a reading. So the first time I had a heart attack during a reading, it was a little surprising. And then I figured out, oh, I'm taking on the physical symptoms.
Oh, wow. Well, that's like when you read about my sister and you had trouble breathing. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So that happens periodically. It depends if it's someone on the other side. It's just the means of being able to identify them so the person knows that I'm talking to the correct person. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a living person, it's usually a warning that either themselves or someone close to them needs to actually go seek medical attention. And that's the only thing that I ask people to take very, very seriously, because that has been scarily accurate in the past. And if people had not followed my advice, they wouldn't be here today.
Huh. Give me an example.
The very first time it happened, a friend of mine, her niece, was having what she thought was stomach problems. And she messaged me and she said, listen, we're on our way to the emergency room. They think it's stomach related. And I said, no, it is not stomach related. Whether you want to believe me or not, she needs to go to a gynecologist. She needs to be checked out. She had stage 3 cervical cancer.
Wow.
And they weren't going to go that route. They thought, for whatever reason, maybe she had a stomach issue too. Uh-huh. But what I saw the real issue was connected to, you know, her having to go to a gynecologist and having it checked out. Yeah. And then another one, the funniest one, if you want to call it funny, I was actually at Chili's sitting at the bar. And I was sitting with a friend of mine, and she had a friend in South America. And so she called her. And when she called her, I got the most excruciating pain in my head. Hmm. And I said, oh my gosh, like, I don't know what's wrong with her, but, you know, and then she proceeded to tell me that she was being tested for heart conditions and things like that. I said, no, she needs a CAT scan. Like, it's something, it's here. It's a CAT scan. She did follow my advice. She had some kind of neurological things where the nerves were like twisted. And they said that if it hadn't been found in a certain amount of time, she probably would have passed.
Wow. That's interesting.
Vicky, have you ever had any of these physical experiences related to some kind of earth or weather condition that's coming, like a tornado, an earthquake, or anything?
Hurricane.
Like hurricane.
I don't think I've had any physical things. I think that would be more like a sense of dread if I think that something like that's, but I've never had a physical reaction.
Okay.
Hmm.
So when you began working as a ghost hunter with this Florida team, you weren't working as a psychic at all then. So what kind of tools do the ghost hunters use, at least the ones that you were with?
Yeah. What we used on Florida Ghost Team and what I have used on my team as well, our biggest bang for our buck is as simple as you get. One of the original ghost hunters, Hans Holzer, he would go in with a tape recorder and a trance medium.
Uh-huh.
We go in with tape recorders because we capture EVPs quite often. Mm-hmm. We also go in if it's a case where we want to see if we can get some video evidence, which is a lot more rare than it is to get audio. We do have a camera system that we set up multiple cameras in a location. It was during one of the investigations that we used those cameras that we were able to capture footage that was featured on Paranormal Caught on Camera. So it was pretty incredible footage, enough to be able to submit. They used it for that show, and they also used it for the Osbournes Want to Believe. And Ozzy, God rest his soul, he tried to say it was a dog, but I can assure you that there is not a dog in the room. Yeah.
Now, how do you know which room to go to? Do you feel it?
Yeah. So what we originally do, I make sure that I do not do the client interview. I have another team member do it, because when I go to a location, I do a walkthrough.
Uh-huh.
And when I do the walkthrough, I have somebody following behind me, or I use a recorder and I say what I feel is the activity that goes on in that room, who might be causing the activity, and so on and so forth. Sometimes it's a little difficult at first for me to distinguish, is this a spirit causing this, or is this the living person that mm-hmm. I'm picking up on? And so once I do my walkthrough, then I will get with my interview person and we'll go over the original client interview. Yeah. And we will confirm most of the time the activity in those rooms. And so those are the rooms that we start with our audio. And like I said, on certain occasions, we might set up full camera systems. And then we switch it up, because sometimes people are what I call paranormal repellent. And although I allow them on my team, you might be less likely to get an EVP if you're in the room with somebody. So I don't make anybody stay with the repellent person for too long. We switch it up. But being the boss, I do a lot of times make certain people go instead of me. I want to get my EVPs. But then we just do the investigation. We try not to be in a person's house too long. We don't want to invade their privacy too much. Now, we do not do any research on the property till after our initial investigation. We don't want to be influenced in any way by anything. I already have the one person who has a little bit more information, and I don't want to complicate that by having a full background investigation done on that house to know the history. I want us to go in kind of blank and blind.
So the houses you choose, this is where somebody has experienced something.
Yes, they contact me.
Uh-huh. Like, what do they experience?
Oh, anything. And you know, the thing is, not everything. This is, and I don't want to sound preachy here, but this is where it's so important, if you are having an experience in anything, that you contact the right team.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a lot of years of experience and a lot of know-how to distinguish between what is paranormal and what is not. We had a case several years back in Port St. Lucie, and the client claimed that she was actually being molested by an entity at night. Huh. Long story short, after the investigation, after a little help from my background in psychology, we figured out that what she was having was repressed memories that were coming through at nighttime from an attack that happened to her years and years ago that she had repressed.
Hmm.
And so she mistook that for an entity, you know, coming through at night. Uh-huh. So it's very important. There was another case where the woman thought she was demonically possessed. We went. As we were doing her interview and doing what we do, she had, to the untrained eye, it looked like she was possessed. But what she had was a panic attack.
Huh.
And so we waited for the panic attack to subside. There was a lot of socioeconomic issues that were going on with that family. So when we left them with resources for free, you know, mental health services for, you know, where food banks. Mm-hmm. And things like that, because that was actually what was needed. And the woman was having panic attacks and didn't realize that they were medically based and it was a spirit or a demon.
Huh. Interesting.
So there's a variety of everything.
Yeah.
What's the connection between mental illness, schizophrenia, and connection with the paranormal?
Okay. Well, this is just, again, this is my personal opinion based on research. And I'll give you a specific example. I think that there is a definite correlation between people who have certain mental illnesses and paranormal activity. Now, does that mean that the mental illness does not exist? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the mental illness makes the activity more conducive, mm-hmm. that they are more susceptible. Our brains are designed technically for us not to see these things. We're not supposed to walking and talking and dealing with the dead. Okay. So
why not?
We're designed so that we're not supposed to see that. But whenever you have any kind of mental illness, those natural defenses are brought down. And as they're down, these entities are able to interact with you. Huh. Specifically, I've been doing a lot of research when it comes to schizophrenia. The short version of this, I had a neighbor. She came to me one day and she was very paranoid acting. And she said that she had something demonic attached to her. And could I help her? And at that time, I wasn't a huge expert when it comes to demonic activity. And she ended up getting super paranoid because she said the voices were listening to her. Okay. She told me that there were two men, an older man and a younger man, and there was a woman. And she could hear their voices when she was in her house. A couple days later, her husband called me to tell me that she had actually been Baker-acted, and she had been diagnosed with late-onset schizophrenia. Now, I wait, because I am not going to get involved at this point. Now, the husband did call me and ask me, you know, what was she saying or whatever. So time elapses, and she reaches out to me, and I said, she kept saying, Vicky, I know that they tell me that I have this. I'm not 100% convinced. Can you please come over? So I went over that night, and I had two recorders. I recorded 27 EVPs within about an hour, and they were an older man, a younger man, and a woman. Exactly the three voices that she said that she heard. Now, the naysayer or skeptic, maybe they could say, well, maybe she was doing some mind trick and she was projecting. I mean, where I had the recorders, I don't see how even the strongest of minds could have done that. And I believe, do I think that she had a little bit of an issue? Yes. Whether it was full onset schizophrenia, I can't state that. But those voices she heard, I had them on my recorder.
Exactly the way
she said. So you can't tell me that that, in my opinion, you can't tell me that that was her mind projecting those voices onto my multiple recorders.
So
so the EVP means electronic voice phenomena. Okay.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So, so a psychiatrist would say that there's nothing paranormal going on here. It's all in her mind and her,
except for the recorder.
But you're saying that there can be both mental illness and the actual paranormal. That's interesting. Because a lot of people,
I don't think one is exclusive for the other. I mean, you can experience a haunt without being schizophrenic. You can be schizophrenic and you can hear voices that may not necessarily be a spirit, but you could also have spirits talking to you because your defenses are down. And I think with those 27 EVPs, that was like within an hour, I had 27 EVPs.
Distinct.
That's unbelievable. And she even described, like, one was an older man, one was a younger. You can hear their voices and tell one was younger, one was older. She said the woman was kind of, how do we put it, not so nice. And the female voice that we got, she was not nice at all.
Oh,
you know, and she was definitely mocking. She was mocking the client. And I had another person reach out to me for a reading in another state. And her daughter had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and she ultimately committed suicide. And she had asked me to look into what I thought and my psychic impression, because I wasn't physically there. My psychic impression is that it was true spirits that pushed her. Again, not saying that they misdiagnosed her, but possibly because of the schizophrenia, it made her more susceptible.
Well, what do these voices say? Do they just say hello, or do they have anything of substance to say? They swear at you?
Yeah. So one of the funniest ones is we were actually in the home where we captured the video that ended up on the show. And so we were using a spirit box at that time. The spirit box is basically a broken radio, and that switch goes really fast in between the stations, but a voice will pop out above and beyond that, and you know that that's an EVP. So I was in the room, and I said something, and the spirit box called me the B word. And I said, I put my hands on my hip, and I said, who are you calling a B? It responded, Bobby Joe. It was talking about my investigator, Bobby Joe, who was also in the room.
Jeez.
So that, we all started cracking up because that's her personality. But I've had anything where they've said, you know, hi, Vicky. I've had get out. One that always stayed in my mind, it was a house in Port St. Lucie. And we said, is there anything we can do to help you? Which is a standard question that we ask when we speak to spirits, because we legitimately want to help. And it was a man's voice, sounded like he was clenching his teeth. And we said, is there anything we can do? And he said, you're wasting your time. just as clear and concise as that, but it sounded just like he was, you know, clenching his teeth. I mean, we've had spirits laughing at us. We've had them talking about us. There was even a time I was with one of my male investigators, and we caught an EVP of a male basically saying, hey, he wants to with her. We've gotten everything you could possibly think of.
Huh.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting.
What prompts these spirits to stay around?
There's a lot of different motivations. Sometimes they're afraid because they were brought up with religion. Mm-hmm. And they think that if they transition to the other side, that there's going to be either hell or some other kind of punishment. And, you know, it's just human nature. You don't necessarily want to voluntarily go to be punished.
Yeah.
Do they know they're dead?
Well, most of them do. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Huh. And I was told when I first joined Florida Ghost Team, we were taught never say, how did you die?
Huh.
And she said that because you weren't supposed to draw their attention to the fact that they were dead if they didn't know it.
Yeah.
But through the years, I have found that as long as we know that they are cognizant, that they are here in spirit form and that they are stuck here, then we will ask, you know, do you know how you passed away, or is there's a reason why you're here? And things like that. But most of the time, if somebody is here, they feared going to the other side.
Hmm.
So I have a friend who died a couple of months ago, and he was a big skeptic and atheist, and he believed there was absolutely nothing after death. This is one life, and that was it. So I'm curious, like, what he might be experiencing now, if anything.
Chagrin? Perhaps.
Good point.
Yeah.
I can only speak of, for example, my mom was very religious. Mm. I was brought up Southern Baptist. She believed there's angels and demons and nothing in between. And when you passed away, you went to heaven. And that was it. That was the end of the story. Yeah. When she passed, it wasn't too long before she was sending me some messages to let me know that she was wrong and how she felt about my abilities, and that there is more to this than what she thought. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've been getting sensations from this guy, which surprises me, because I would think he would not try to communicate at all. Because
you didn't tell me that. He tried.
No, it's just, you know, nothing really, you know, verbal or anything, you know, that I can think of words, but I just sense him being around because I keep thinking about him, and I don't really like to think about that guy, actually.
Well,
what I'm getting the next time he comes around, or if he wants to prove that you mentioned and I talked about him, I'm getting like numb from the elbow all the way to my fingers. Uh-huh. It's like a numb electricity kind of combo thing. Uh-huh. So watch for that.
Okay.
I mean, that'll be one of the signs that Rob can watch for, that it'll be this guy, David.
Yes, I think so, because we were talking about him when the sensation happened.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, Vicky, one of the most interesting things you told me about when we were talking at Barnes & Noble was I asked you about the other side, and you said you go to a classroom, and if you've been a bad person, you sit in that classroom. It's like, okay, you got, you know, after school classroom now, which I've never heard anybody describe it that way.
Probably because I'm a teacher. That's the way it was shown to me as an example of a classroom. So what I'm about to say, my opinion is strictly that. It's my opinion based on what I have been shown. I've been shown that when we pass away, we go to what I refer to now as the other side. Those people who learned all their life lessons, they go and they check in. To me, it looks like a big giant check-in desk at a hotel. And you ring the bell and they come out and you say, hey, listen, I've been good, right? And they're like, yeah, you're good. And they're like, okay, I'll be back. So they come back in visitation. Those are people that you see leave young kids or spouses that were very dependent on them or they loved a lot. And they will spend a lot of their time in visitation. Now, there's some people that get up there and they're like, you know, ding, ding. And they're like, hey, can I leave? And they're like, no, you need to go to classroom 101 down the hall and to the right. And they are there until they figure out and rectify or at least acknowledge the mistakes that they made in their lifetime.
Hmm.
Now, a lot of people, believe it or not, are very disappointed when I say my opinion on what happens to, say, serial killers or something like that. They're like, oh, don't they go straight to hell? In all of my years, I have never been shown a place that's called hell.
Huh.
Now, if we want to get biblical, hell is not actually in the Bible. In the few versions where you might find it, it was a mistranslation. Hmm. When Lucifer and his minions fell to earth, that's where they fell, earth. They didn't fall to a place called hell. I believe, and Native Americans also believe, that earth is kind of hell. Mm-hmm. And it's when you earn your freedoms and you go to the other side, that is ultimately what you want to experience. And our time here on earth is a bit of hell. So there are, I believe, serial killers are going to be put in these classrooms. It probably takes them a lot longer to get through. And so I've been shown some people have multiple classrooms, like they had multiple issues that they were supposed to work through, and it can't be done in one classroom. They shift from one to the other. And I read for this one woman whose father, he was so stubborn and would not acknowledge his, you know, wrongdoings and the things he should have done. He had multiple classrooms and she would get multiple readings, you know, certain time periods. And I did see him progress through those. And when he finally, you know, got through the last one, then he was granted his freedoms, which he was kind of humble at that point. And he wasn't doing visitations. He just kind of stayed there.
Okay, we have visitations. You mean to Earth?
To come here, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's, and like I tell people, this is just what I've been shown. And I can only speak the truth of what I see and what I've experienced and what spirit has let me experience. Because I can only do what spirit allows me to do. I can only see what they allow me to see. And I can't go beyond them.
Hmm. Well, is there anybody in the classroom with these people? Especially yes. Like, okay, the guy who goes from classroom to classroom.
Yeah, it's, if I had to use an example, it's almost like that old TV show, This Is Your Life.
Uh-huh.
And they have to relive those moments and they have to look specifically, like say if a person were completely shut off from their emotions and their children never knew that they loved them. They loved them, but they never showed it. Or the way they showed it was too harsh or whatever. Uh-huh. They're going to keep seeing those things replayed until they figure out, okay, this is what I should have done.
Hmm.
I take responsibility. I had one case. Typically, you're in the classroom alone with whoever the instructor is. But I had one case, one of the first times I saw a classroom. It was the client's uncle, and he had molested her.
Hmm.
And he had never acknowledged that he did it. He was actually being babysat by his father, which would have been her grandfather. And he was kind of stuck there babysitting until it was time. And what was interesting, what finally ultimately happened. And I remember when I first saw him, he was looking down. And at first I'm like, oh, he's embarrassed. He was looking down because he had very distinctive eyes. And he knew the minute he looked at me, I would describe his eyes and, you know, his niece would know exactly who it is, which he did finally look up. But what ultimately happened is that she had to heal before he was allowed to move. And there was a subsequent reading later on after the initial one in which he told me and showed me that. And when she started the healing process, then he was allowed to ultimately leave the classroom.
Hmm. Interesting.
Vicky, what are your thoughts on reincarnation?
You know, obviously, when I first started, I just said, I grew up Southern Baptist.
Mm-hmm.
And people have often asked me that. My go-to answer at first is always, well, wouldn't that make God the ultimate recycler? I mean, if he just lets our souls come out, he's showing us recycling in its finest form. I will randomly, it's not typically something that happens in every reading, but I will suddenly with some people get a glimpse into their past life. Mm-hmm. And I will very clearly see who they were, what they were. I've had people read me and very clearly see past life experiences. I am not an expert in it. Do I think I believe in it? Yeah, I think I do. Especially when I look at myself, I was 7 years old and I had an obsession with Henry VIII. What 7 year old wants to watch a documentary?
That's unusual.
Yeah. And I believe to this day that I must have been somewhere in that court during Henry VIII's reign.
Huh.
And when I was even younger than that, I had an obsession with Egypt. And again, not the level of what a 5 or 6 year old would have had with Egypt. And I have to believe that it's because I had that prior connection that I lived during that time. Hmm. So I definitely do not discount it. I am not an expert on it, so I can't speak too much other than my, personal experience and the random times I've got to experience it through other people.
I've had two different psychics tell me about a very similar past life. It wasn't a very good one. I wasn't a very good person. Apparently, I was a big landowner in Europe near France and Spanish border, and there was a convent there on my property, and I didn't like those nuns. They were up to no good. They were going into trances and dancing around, and so I burned the place down. I heard this from two people.
Wow.
In this life, I grew up Catholic, and I had trouble with nuns. Yeah. I mean...
Yeah, someone told me years ago, because I've always had a problem with my older sister. Basically, I was born. That's what I did wrong. And she took it out on me for years and years to come. And I went to a psychic one time, and she said that in a past life, because she's my older sister, but in a past life, she was also my older sister. I was the younger sister, and our dad was our dad. But that was back in the day when you had to marry off the older sister first. Well, apparently this wealthy, good-looking guy came to town and, of course, chose me over her. And my dad went in and approved the wedding. I lived in a large estate. I had children. And she didn't have any of that. She was a spinster who died alone. And because of that, she carried that resentment of me from that lifetime. So when I joke and say, oh, she's mad at me because I was born, it very well could be that she carried that over from the other lifetime. Yeah. And I think things even out when it comes to our lifetimes. This lifetime, I'll tell you, she's been married for years and I'm single. So I guess I got paid back in this one.
But you have a daughter.
I actually have three children. So I was able. Right now I'm currently single. So.
Yeah. So, you mentioned sent us a question about commercial properties you investigated. So there's ghosts in commercial properties as well.
Oh yeah, they're all over. There's spirits, literally. Thank goodness we can't see them all, because there are more spirits walking amongst us than there are living people. One of the places that stand out the most is I was lucky enough to investigate multiple times the Cuban Club over in Ybor City. And it was before the theater that they had there was in disrepair. And one of the things that we did for the ghost team was that we did stay the night promos, and the money that we collected went to the restoration of this theater. But the first time we went there, I was on monitor duty. And if anybody's ever investigated and you're on monitor duty, the whole place is dark and you're sitting there with this bright screen right in your face, right? So this is all you can see is this bright screen. So I'm sitting there and all of a sudden I had pain in my arm. And I was like, oh, and I just went like this because I wasn't allowed on a break. That was when I was working on Florida Ghost Team. We had to ask the boss for a break. So I waited until she said, hey, you guys, you know, can break. So an investigator and I went into the restroom and I looked. I had a deep scratch on my arm that drew blood. It had actually, and there was no, my hand was on the table. I hadn't scratched myself on anything. And I know the point where I felt that. So fast forward, we go back. And at this point now, they're in the process of reconstructing the theater. So there's a lot of, there's scaffolding, there's, they have plywood down on the stage that they're going to, you know, use and whatever. So I went on the stage and I said, last time I was here, you scratched me. Can you tell me why? Well, next thing I know, I have this pain down my arm. Jeez. I go like this. I tell the investigator I'm with, I'm like, I do not want to touch my arm. Let's go out in the lobby. I kept my arms up like this. And when we went to the lobby, I had three scratch marks from my wrist all the way to my elbow. And she's a witness that I didn't have any scratches prior to that. But the Cuban Club was also famous. Ghost hunters went there. And there, I think there were more than one team member who got sick. And that's a phenomenon that we experienced with multiple teams. When we went there, there was always someone who got violently ill. And most of the time they would have to leave the building. They would physically get sick. And as long as they stayed out of the building, they recovered. But if they walked back in, they would get sick again.
What was the reason?
I guess it was just the spirits. And that was also, they had a ballroom that was a fully functioning ballroom. It was one of the floors that they were actually using. And that was the first time I ever experienced the cobweb effect. I was right in the middle of the ballroom and I walked straight into what felt like a giant cobweb, but there was nothing there. And so that was the first time I ever experienced that. So I would definitely place of anything I've gone to, the Cuban Club is probably one of the most haunted.
What do you think the cobweb was?
Yeah, just gonna
the sensation or?
I walked through a spirit.
Oh, you walked through? Okay.
I walked through a spirit. What I figured out is that cobweb effect where there is no cobweb is you physically walking through a spirit. So now when that happens to me, it's usually not the cobweb. It's usually electricity that I feel. But at that point, it was very early on. I didn't have much ability at all. And it was it just felt like I had walked head to toe to a big, giant cobweb. And I've also...
Go ahead.
The other place I would put up there is Lake Worth Playhouse. I have privileged to be there multiple times as well.
Okay.
So it's an interesting place.
Who are the spirits who haunt these places? Do you know?
The one that scratched me in Ybor at the Cuban Club, that was a female. And she was wearing a yellow dress. I don't know who she was in particular, but I know what she looks like. I always regret the fact that I didn't take art classes. You know, I could sit down and sketch these people. And I'm not Amy Allen, so I don't have a sketch artist on hand to do it for me. Because I do see them very clearly, but don't necessarily know who they are. But that one, the female, is the one that scratched me in Ybor. There's a lot of speculation that Lake Worth Playhouse is haunted by the brothers that originally owned it. There's even folklore that one of them had killed himself there. That's not correct. Somebody needs to check the facts on that one. That's not where he passed away. But they did spend a lot of time there. So it's possible that they still hang around and watch their theater.
Interesting.
How do they appear to you? I mean, have you seen any ghosts that appear like physical beings?
They appear physically to me in my mind's eye, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't go up and touch them, but they're going to be in front of me full form where I can see them. I could describe hair color, eye color, you know, the whole thing. But I don't feel like, even though I see them, I don't feel like they're manifesting. I feel it's me being able to see them with my mind's eye.
How about balls of light? Have you seen that?
I physically saw, I was actually in my living room years ago when I lived with my mother, sitting in the living room, and this big giant light just casually floated through the living room. The cat saw it. And so this thing goes up the stairs. The cat followed it up the stairs. And then the cat got to the top of the stairs and it just stared like this for the longest time. And I went up to double check, like, am I hallucinating? Is there a bug? Is there whatever? And there was nothing there at that point that I could physically see. We had a really cool, we had cameras set up on a location. And the person downstairs on monitor duty didn't know what we were saying upstairs. I just got through saying there are three spirits here. The person picks up the walkie, calls me, and she goes, Vicky, I don't know what you just said, but three big giant balls of light just flew at you. So, wow. Yeah.
So, well, Vicky.
I was just going to comment about it. I do think that cats and dogs see spirits. I think they often see the spirits, you know, like I know Nigel, when he lost Nika, who he'd lived with for a number of years, he'd be sitting off, gazing off, you know, and I thought, okay, he's seeing her, you know.
Yeah, for sure they can. But you know what? Animals are just like people. They have different levels of ability. Mm-hmm. I've had super paranormal cats, and I've had cats as dumb as rocks when it comes to seeing spirits. Yeah. So, yeah, it definitely varies the same way it does with human ability to be able to see them.
Do you see any connection between ghosts and aliens and Bigfoot or other supernatural type entities?
There's a lot of people that are making the connection because we're looking at, I learned it through a guest I actually had one time who talked about the Alaskan Triangle, which was Alaska's version of the Bermuda Triangle. But it's where you have multiple Bigfoot sightings. You have multiple alien type encounters. You have a ton of spirit. And this person was saying that there is a definite correlation between anything that is not, air quote, normal. Anything that is paranormal has a common link somehow. And I mean, I can even look locally. I'll take Jupiter Farms, for example. And no offense if anybody lives in Jupiter Farms. But Jupiter Farms, I've had multiple investigations, a.k.a. looking for ghosts and spirits.
In different buildings, you mean?
Yeah, in people's houses. Uh-huh. And multiple UFO sightings. Like people have seen so many what they think are crafts, and it's in that same area. You know, I mean, I understand that Al Capone used to dump his bodies out there, which explains about the spirit. But how does that explain about, you know, possible alien, you know, interaction and encounters? But I do think anything that is not on the normal spectrum and fall under paranormal have that connection. Just like all of us who are normal, we have that connection. I think paranormal also has that connection, in my opinion.
Have you ever had a UFO sighting yourself?
Yeah.
Was Al Capone there too?
No, it wasn't that neighborhood. No, it was 1980, and it was in our neighborhood. Now, our neighborhood was a dirt road. It was basically a big horseshoe. Our house was 3/4 mile down this dirt road. So the reason I say I want to emphasize it was a dirt road because they very seldom would grade it. So it was like this, you know, after a while. My mom had this disgusting old Toyota that she insisted on buying, even though it had no power steering, an AM radio, and no air conditioning. This is also important to the story. She and I had gone out to dinner and she turned on the road. When she turned on the road, almost at the point, like I said, about 3/4 mile down, what seemed to be over the road near our house, we saw this big giant light. And that's all it looked like at first. So we're going down the road and we're going slow because of the, you know, the bumps. The windows are down. at some point, I realized there's no sound. Mm-hmm. Our neighborhood was surrounded by woods. There was a house because we lived on 2.5 acres. So the houses were spaced apart. And in between some of the houses, there were stretches of woods. And I realized there's no sound. As we get closer, I see an object. My mom saw it too. It seemed at first to me, because our brain tries to come up with a logical. It looked like a blimp.
Huh.
Now, why would there be a blimp over my neighborhood, you know, at 9 o'clock at night? I have no idea. But again, our brains are trying to figure this out. As we get closer, we realize that the lights are so bright because it's multiple round bulbs, rows and rows of them around this object.
Yeah.
And they're not moving. What they're doing is one's turning off and the next one's turning on. So it's, you know, it's going in sequence. So it created the illusion. And this is how close I could see this.
How big was it? How big?
It was like a blimp. It was the size of a blimp.
Okay, like the size of a blimp. Okay.
Yeah, it was the size. And that's why, you know, my brain was trying to make it a blimp. So as we see, I'm like, okay, if it's a blimp, is it going to say something? Is it going to advertise something? But these lights are not moving. They're just turning off. And the next one turns on so that it creates the illusion of this. Then all I know is at the snap of a finger, it was gone. And when I say gone, it was gone. It was not, oh, let's go up a little bit and then we're going to go over the power lines and disappear. It was gone. My mom witnessed the whole thing. We both at some point looked at each other and go, where'd it go? And we proceeded to make our way to the house. And of course, the first thing I did was call my friend who lived across the street. I was like, yeah, you don't believe what we just saw. And I talked him into coming out to the road. Couldn't see anything. The sounds that were absent before were there. There were the frogs. There were the crickets. There were all the nighttime sounds. They were present again. But they were gone when we were going down that road. And to this day, as you can tell, I remember every single detail of what happened.
Did you have any missing time?
I don't know, because that was like nowadays we would have had our phone, right? We would have grabbed our phone immediately. Like, oh, it's 8:41, you know, whatever. We were not cognizant of what time we saw it or what time we actually pulled into the house. Maybe if my mom had bought a car that had a decent radio, it would have had a clock on it and we would have known. But that aside, we have no idea because we weren't thinking it's such and such a clock, and now we're home. Mm-hmm. And even till, you know, the day my mom passed away, she remembers it. I remember it, every single solitary detail up until the point we don't know how it disappeared. Hmm. We think we blinked and it was gone.
Yeah. So one of the popular theories now about UFOs is that a lot of them are interdimensional. And maybe that was just passing through a portal to another dimension at that point, possibly.
Yeah. I mean, that makes as much sense as anything else, honestly. I mean, I can tell you it was 1980. I seriously doubt, because I do know that there have, in my opinion, there's been a lot of sightings of UFOs. And I think it is experimental craft.
Mm-hmm.
That our government is messing around with and practicing with. In 1980, I really don't think that they had invisibility as one of the options. You know, or to be able to zoom off. If it zoomed, we didn't see it. I just don't think technology was there at that time that could have made this thing disappear. And it wasn't small. This thing was huge. I mean, stand under a blimp.
Yeah,
and you'll see how big they actually are.
There's a new video that was just released a couple of days ago. I saw this on CBS News, where the U.S. government shot a missile at a UFO off the coast of Yemen. And it was, they even had the name of the missile. It was a very powerful missile. It struck the craft and bounced off it. And everybody was just shocked because it just kept on going. and the missile just went off to the side out of the picture.
It was a hellfire,
right. Yeah, you saw that, John?
I did, yep.
Okay, yeah. What do you think of it?
Fuzzy. Yeah. I wish it was a little clear.
Yeah, and it looked like there were three things that not got knocked off it, and they went along with the craft too. You know, you could see it following them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you'd like to see it in a little clearer, but clearly you can see that missile banging into it and bouncing off.
Mm-hmm. And the most, to me, some of the most compelling evidence is when you have former military who were basically told that you need to be quiet about this. And then finally, especially some of them that are getting older and, you know, near a certain point, they will say, listen, this is what happened, that we were told to be quiet about this. And they are professional people, very sane people who witnessed these things and then were told to shut up about it. That's, you know, suspicious.
You know, we spent a weekend with Betty Hill. I think I told, maybe I didn't tell you this. And when we were covering a story for Omni Magazine, and she came over to our house the next night for dinner, and she was talking. We had two psychic friends there who were fascinated by her story. And all of a sudden, she jumps to her feet, runs out to the parking lot. Rob and I look at each other and thought, what happened? So we all follow her out in the parking lot, and she's standing there looking up at the sky, pointing at what I thought was an airplane. And she says, it's one of them. I said, okay. She says, they can disguise themselves. I said, okay. And she, the woman who was traveling with her was a nurse, because at that point in her life, I think Betty was not in great health. And the woman said, come on, Betty, let's go back inside. And afterwards, when she and the nurse had left, Renee and Tony and Rob and I sat around talking about it. And we, you know, I mean, you can't deny somebody else's experience because you don't experience it.
Yeah, we all saw an airplane.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean that what she saw was an airplane, yeah. You know.
But how did she know there was anything out there? That's
I know. There was no sound.
He was in the house, you know, and then suddenly ran outside. There was no sound at all that we could hear.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with anything paranormal, I'm not going to dismiss any of it. Mm-mm. As not happening, you know, and everybody, like you said, everybody's experiences are their own. Well, right. I know one of the more controversial figures probably in the paranormal was George Lutz, who had lived in the Amityville house and was called a fraud and right. He admitted to this, that, and the other. I had a dear friend who was personal friends with George Lutz. And I could tell you that George Lutz never changed a word of his story.
Mm-hmm.
And he told his story to try to help people. And he said, listen, believe me or not, it's my experience. This right. is what I went through. And I don't, of course, there are cases where you have, you know, certain mental illnesses and delusions and things like that, or even people who fake and have things as a hoax. But overall, in general, I listen to anybody uh-huh. who's had any kind of experience. And I feel sorry for people that aren't open to listen mm-hmm. to some of these otherworldly things. Yeah. You know, if you don't believe in magic, you can't experience
it. Yeah, exactly.
How about the work of Ed and Lorraine Warren? I mean, they seem to be more into the demonic stuff that they encountered.
Yeah. Ed and Lorraine can be a very controversial topic. I have interviewed their nephew, John Zaffis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have talked to people that had firsthand experience with Ed and Lorraine. What I'm going to say is you're going to see or interpret what's going on based on your own belief system.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If you believe in demons, you're probably going to see demons.
Uh-huh. Right.
If you don't believe in them, you're probably going to identify what's going on as being something else. Mm-hmm. The fact is they have a large body of work. I think it's very important that they pave the way for paranormal investigating. Them and Hans Holzer mm-hmm. paved the way for us to be able to investigate the paranormal. But again, if you believe in demons, you're probably going to see them.
Yeah. Hans Holzer, his books were just fantastic.
Yeah. He, a weird coincidence, because he used to use trance mediums. And years ago, when I was teaching third grade, I had an assistant, and her great aunt was actually one of Hans Holzer's trance mediums. Yeah, I thought, what of all the people in the world that I ended up working with her. But yeah, I've read so many of his books. And like I said, granted, it was before we had thermal imaging cameras and all that kind of stuff, but it was very simple. You talk to the spirits, you listen to them, and you help them. You know, and he had it all recorded.
Right.
Because the medium would go into her trance, he would talk directly to the spirit. It was all on the recorder.
Hmm. You know, back to Ed and Lorraine Warren again. You know, if it's something scary, it's can be commercial too. I mean, what are there now? Three Conjuring movies out there?
Conjuring.
And the truth behind, and you know, people can verify this with one of the daughters that lived in the original Conjuring house. The movie. Listen. The father who lived in that house punched Ed because they did a seance in the kitchen and it didn't go well. Hmm. So it's not this endearing story how the Warrens, and this is coming from the people that lived in the house.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't some endearing where he went and got that old vehicle working, like they show him working on the guy's car, and they weren't with them for this whole thing. Ed got punched out.
Jeez.
Because he had a seance that didn't go right. And the father punched him out. So these movies definitely, they take poetic license, which we can always assume that's going to happen when it comes to Hollywood. I have not seen the latest one. Now, that haunting is based on the Smurl haunting, which is one of my favorite. That's one that I've read the book, I've seen the movies, I've researched it. I'm kind of scared to go see the movie. I don't want it to be ruined because I know the story so well. So I've been hesitant to actually see the movie. But just always remember, anybody that watches these, they've definitely taken poetic license mm-hmm. with it.
Yeah,
definitely. And, you know, I mean, I think that the Warrens probably legitimately tried to help people, but whether they were qualified to, or if they saw things only from one vision, that's up for debate.
Hmm. So there's a lot of paranormal teams out there now, aren't there? Ghost hunters. And do you think there's... when you have amateurs, especially, that there's any dangers they could run into for them or their clients?
Especially for their clients. Mm-hmm. As far as amateurs, this is going to sound harsh, but as far as amateurs running into trouble for themselves, oh, well, it's kind of what you signed up for. But my problem is what you have now done to a family.
Uh-huh.
Because if somebody reaches out to you and they're having legitimate issues in their home, they're scared. Uh-huh. And they need somebody who really knows what they're doing, not somebody that's pretending that they know
right.
what to do.
Yeah.
And it takes years of research and investigating before you have a composite of experiences that are going to help you help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just say to any team, be upfront with the client that, hey, we're new to this, but we're going to see if we can capture some EVPs and try to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. It will take a while and you have to be dedicated to it. We used to call them weekend warriors. Those were the paranormal teams that needed something to do on the weekend.
Yeah.
And so they would find people that was willing to let them come in their house, and they'd have their fun, and they'd do those kind of things with no solutions.
Hmm.
I've always wanted to make sure if our clients wanted a solution, we'd figure out the solution. Sometimes they just wanted validation that they had something in their home, and the things they were experiencing, we could back up sometimes with evidence. And especially when we added the research to the property. So it's very, very, very important, especially if you have any kind of case where you might have a negative entity, whether it's human, whether it's an elemental, whether it's if you believe in demonic, if it's any of those, you need to have somebody that knows what they're doing. And don't just let anybody in your home. There, I did a case years ago. She ended up a dear friend of mine. So at one point she said, "Do you mind if I bring another team in?" So go ahead, just make sure they're a decent team. So she brings in this other team, and they captured an EVP that said, "Kill them all." Well, they were listening to it live. So they packed up their stuff, not telling the client, and they left quickly.
Huh.
She reached out to them a couple weeks, and she said, "Because my turnaround for my team is 2 weeks. By then, I expect everybody to have gone over their audio, give me their audio clips, any kind of pictures or anything." So we have 2 weeks after investigation. And so she waited a couple of weeks because she was used to my timeline. And she contacted the guy and she said, "So what did you find? Are you coming back?" He's like, "Yeah, we're not coming back." And she said, "Well, why aren't you coming back?" And he said, "Oh, we got this EVP that said kill them all," which... probably not the best thing to say to the client, but whatever. You could have eased into it a little more. And then he said to her, he said, "Do you know someone named Vicky?" And she said, "Yeah." He said, "Oh, we captured an EVP that said, 'Where's Vicky? We like Vicky.'"
Meaning you.
Meaning me. The spirits did not like that other team coming in.
Jeez, that is interesting.
Yeah. Because you have to establish relationships, even if it's, for one night, you're showing respect and you're establishing a relationship with whoever is there, whether they have a body or not. You're establishing that respect and that relationship. I don't believe in provoking. They have gotten teacher voice before. Like if they're messing with a child or something like that, I will, before I leave, tell them, "You need to stop it now. Don't make me come back." You know, just like you would with it, "Don't make me come back here." And a lot of times you will find a decrease in activity. Worst case, you know, we do offer cleansings. And a lot of times people, as long as they know what's in their home, they're okay with coexisting.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. We had a friend who no longer around anymore, Connie Cannon, who was a very good psychic medium and also worked on hauntings. And her whole thing was to get the being to move on. That was her whole approach. And she was annoyed because some of the people didn't want to let them go. They liked the thrill of having this being. And she said, "No, you got to let this being move on. That's the point." And do you think that's a positive approach to ghost hunting?
Yeah. I mean, what we do, we won't randomly go in and secretly try to move on spirits. I have gone in and told the spirits, "Hey, if you want, follow me home. You know, we can talk later, and, you know, we want to do something." But when we do an actual cleansing, we actually play good cop, bad cop. And Bobby Joe is the bad cop, and I'm the good cop. So Bobby Joe is the one in charge of the sweet grass or whatever she's using, which is appropriate for the haunt. And she goes through, and while she's doing that, she says, "Okay, if any of you want help, Vicky's in such and such room." And I wait till all the spirits that want to cross, there'll be spirits walking down the street, and they realize that I'm going to bring the light, and they're going to have a chance. So I've had rooms full of spirits. And she goes through, and then the ones that don't want to move, she does chase them out of the house. And there's some validation we got from that. She's in this one room. I'm physically seeing in my mind's eye, "Oh, this spirit just ran out the window. Like, they just bolted." And she goes, "Oh, he just went out the window." I was in a totally different room. And then there was a sliding glass door and the client's dogs were outside. So I had the room full of my spirits and I said, okay, now I'm going to bring the light. Bobby Joe had come out of the bedroom and she could see where I was and she could see the sliding glass door with the dogs. When I, in my mind's eye, had opened up that light and I saw the spirits rising, the dogs watched something.
Wow.
There are multiple somethings go look up. And of course, the dog didn't know that I'm seeing them go up. But I ultimately, if we can help somebody go to the other side, that's what we want to do because that's the natural process.
Right.
I spend a lot of time speaking to spirits and say, I know you may be afraid to go to the other side, but right now you're creating your own hell by being stuck here.
Yeah.
And it's not the natural process. You need to go. And some of them listen, some of them don't. Yeah.
Do they ask you questions like, what do you think I'm going to see on the other side or if I keep moving on?
No, no, not usually. Not when I'm, if I'm doing a mass crossing like that. They usually just come and sit. They literally will sit in front of me and wait for, because I just ask for, you know, the light. I ask for all the loved ones to come and collect. That one particular, that same house, I had come across, this is a one that ties into EVP. So I came across this one guy. He looked like this rough biker dude. He was wearing leather boots and they had like these little chains on them and he's wearing whatever. And he's like, I don't want to go to the other side. I don't know what you're talking about, whatever. So as we're going through the process, and I said, he's like from the 70s or something. And he's got like the you know, mustache and beard thing or whatever. So when I actually called the light, he was the first one to go. And when he left, there was a huge pop in the room and we had that on audio. But when we went back to review the full audio, remember what I said, what type he was? We have a male voice that said, keep on trucking. Which is, as you know, a big turn from the 70s.
Right, yeah. That's interesting.
Funny.
Yeah. So one other question. We're coming to the end of
now, Vicky,
our
you need to write a book about all this stuff. This is fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, I started my book, but it's about personal stuff, too. It's called Reflections of a Psychic Single. So it's mixing my own journey of my relationship issues with the paranormal.
Yeah, that's fine.
Paranormal is going to be a big part of it too.
Yeah. Just one other question I have as we wrap it up. What about Halloween? And that's supposed to be the day when the veil is the thinnest between worlds, between here and the other side. Have you ever found anything particular unique about that day for ghost hunting?
No, I haven't, to be honest. And I've done live events where we investigated certain locations on Halloween. And one of them was, it used to be called Shay's Pub. It was originally the Red Lion in Boynton. It's now since closed down. But we did a live investigation with full cameras. We were online the whole time. We also did an investigation at the Clear Channel Studios off of 45th Street one Halloween as well. I haven't noticed a difference. And to be honest with you, I also have not noticed a difference when it comes to spirits and the full moon. I've actually found the opposite effect. The full moon, I get fewer EVPs on a full moon.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just there's more light and they like to hide a little bit more and they don't like to come out. I don't know, but I've actually gotten fewer EVPs during a full moon.
So you've
really
done
the people that's opposite. I don't know, but that's my experience.
So you've been in these houses on full moons.
Yes.
Yeah.
How about new moons?
We've been every single thing you can think of. And I haven't really noticed that. And I know people are going to argue with me because we know how much the moon cycles affect a lot of things here on Earth. But I have not found any direct correlation that they increase or make it easier to communicate with, you know, any.
How about eclipses?
I've never investigated. I don't think I've ever investigated where we actually had a home during an eclipse. That would be the one that we have.
Well, interesting.
At least Halloween gives a day for promoting the contact with the other side. So
yes, absolutely. That's what it's good for. That and candy.
Now, Vicki, tell people where they can contact you. Do you have a website? All that.
If you would like to, if you're on Facebook and you want to get in touch with me, you can go to my readings by Vicki, V-I-C-K-I-E, on Facebook. It's also mine on Instagram. You can check out my podcast. We are on hiatus right now because we're filming a horror movie. But once we have the horror movie wrapped up, we'll be back on the air every Thursday. And that's The Weird and Whatever. And then you can email me at Nancy, N-A-N-C-Y, 38, Drew, D-R-E-W.
Love that.
at AOL.com. For those people old enough, yes, Nancy Drew. That's my email address. And that is good for if you want to schedule a reading, if you want an investigation, anything you need, that's how you contact me.
It was funny. I told my friend Melissa, I said, here's her email. She goes, Nancy Drew? How cool is that? So you're going to hear from Melissa.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Vicki. It's been great.
And I'll send you the link when this goes up.
Yeah, we enjoyed it.
Thank you so much.
This is great.
Good talking.
Thanks so much.
It was. Thank you guys so much. Yeah.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for joining the Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.